Hello there.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
Hello there. Welcome to a podcast on Star Wars Shadowpoint in the Star Wars universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Iman Khusro. How are we doing today, Iman?
We're doing well, Jesse. I just want to give a quick shout out to some of the community members who reached out based on my message from the last episode regarding our local game store manager passing away. And it was really nice to be loved by the community, but then of course have them also donate on that GoFundMe, which was amazing as well. So feeling a lot better than last week, of course. And by the time this comes out, hopefully I'm back to normal. So on the rise, the Force is awakening.
There's been an awakening. It's getting ready for Adepticon. That's right. So really happy you're feeling better, Iman. And we've got some exciting topics we want to talk about today. And we're kind of going to touch on a couple different of those topics. Number one, right out the gate, some errata changes. Following that, some recent tournament results. And then closing out the episode with a discussion about some units in Star Wars Shatterpoint. But before we get to that, we have some people to thank.
Absolutely. Hello There is supported by our patrons. And our patrons support us at patreon.com/HelloThereCast. We have two new patrons this week. One at the Padawan Acolyte tier, which is Adam, and Alex, who joined us at the Jedi Knight Sith Warrior tier. So Adam and Alex, thank you so much for your support and welcome to the Hello There family. We're looking forward to chatting with you in the Discord and getting to know you.
Thank you guys so much. Of course, Hello There is also affiliated with Mr. Laser at mr-laser.square.site. You can use the code HelloThere5 to get 5% off your orders. Perfect time to jump on and grab your Plo box, some Ewoks, a new Vader, get that Hondo pre-order in, get that Bad Batch and Mando pre-order in with Mr. Laser and use our code HelloThere5. It also lets Mr. Laser know that we sent you, but more importantly, gets you 5% additional off your order.
We're also supported by Imperial Terrain, your number one resource for all Star Wars-themed tabletop terrain for Star Wars games such as Legion and Shatterpoint. You can use the code HelloThere5 for 5% off their digital files. John, the owner, is a huge advocate for the game, for Shatterpoint, and for the community, and is often volunteering and supporting local events and conventions. So check him out. And they've got some really cool terrain that they've released recently, and I'm really excited to try them all, including the new landing pad.
That's exciting. And most important of all, in our sponsors segment, we got to thank our producers that make this show happen. These are people that get a shout out every week because they have chosen that tier on Patreon. Shout out to Bounty Hunter Brady, our producer, and our ultimate producers, Sith Emperor Kevin, Grandmaster Griffin, and Daimyo Matt. Thank you. You guys make this whole show happen.
Absolutely. And they're awesome community members too. Great people to chat with and play games with.
Absolutely. Well, Iman, let's get right into some exciting rules updates and erratas, and also very important to know. We're always learning more about the game every episode, I feel like. And this is one of those things that was very eye-opening for us, especially hot on the heels of our Plo episode, because we did mention in our Plo episode to stay tuned with us, because AMG would be giving us official rulings on Plo's identity. And what do you know? They gave us official rulings on Plo's identity.
They did. They've actually been doing a lot of rules updates, or clarifications rather, I must say, which I do appreciate tremendously. And so we'll talk about some of those now, but we'll start, of course, with the Plo one. And I know you're really excited for this one, Jesse.
So excited.
So one of our patrons actually went and asked on the forums, and this is the question they asked. Can Plo use his identity? We can do this the simple way or the difficult way while exposed and hence take damage. So this is a question that we've all been patiently awaiting the answer for quite some time. And I think a lot of us said, well, if he's already exposed, he could just take a damage and then continue to use his identity if need be and give someone else his expertise. And following that, 2 months later, someone posted, can Plo use his identity if he already has an exposed token on him, or can he only use it if he doesn't already have one on him? If he can do it, would he take damage as normal for adding a condition token that's already on a character? So Nagoldar, one of the moderators, said, yes, Plo can use his identity if he already has an exposed token on them. And then if he attempts to gain the exposed condition, if he already has the exposed condition, he will take damage instead. So great. Kind of worked as we all thought it would, but it's really nice to get that clarity.
Absolutely. Myself personally, Iman, I've been erring on the side of this not happening because I think it's always good to err on the side not in your favor of a rule, especially if the rule comes out and it was clearly that way the whole time. So I've been playing Plo like he takes the first initial expose and that's it. you know, until he removes that expose. So I'm really happy to see that it's the same as like if you'd already have a condition in the game, right? And it's just Plo optionally choosing to take it on himself instead. So it makes perfect sense. But now it's fully clear.
Yes, it's super clear, which is really nice. But that's actually not why this change is exciting, because as a result of some of these questions, more was revealed. So then someone said, if Plo takes damage in this way, meaning if he already had an exposed condition and then he takes another damage because he gets exposed again per the rules, does he still gain both of the benefits of we can do this the simple way or the difficult way, his identity, allowing the defender character to use his expertise and dash toward the attacker? Again, Ngoldar responds, gaining exposed is required to use his expertise chart. He may dash without getting exposed. And I was like, wait, what? Someone else followed up with, doesn't the use of then in the identity ability text require that the first part of the ability be used in order to gain the dash? Ngoldar, it does not. Gaining exposed is optional. Note, the conditional language used in the section regarding exposed and the use of the expertise chart, meaning that Plo can just dash. He just dashes.
He's a dash machine.
Jesse, in layman's terms, explain it to the audience.
Absolutely. So I think the best way to go about this is to read this final part of Plo's identity, which we just referenced in our episode, the best part of his identity. You know, the expose we were saying is kind of icing, but the actual cake is the dash. That's the question you always wanted to ask yourself. We thought, now it's just, he's getting a dash. So basically you have a window and Plo's not wounded, and an ally is targeted within range 3 of Plo, he may choose to gain the expose. Then the allied unit, if it was a trooper or padawan, can use Plo's expertise chart. That's great. And we just learned that he can do that even when he has an expose to take more damage. But now we have this then clause, which says after the attack is resolved, if the defending character was a trooper or padawan, Plo may dash towards the attacker. So now we know for a fact they don't have to use Plo's expertise. Anytime a unit with a trooper or padawan tag is attacked, Plo is getting to dash towards the attack. And that is absolutely insane. It makes Plo so much better for a myriad of reasons. But the biggest reason is now he's dashing on his tactic, and now he's dashing when his allies are attacked, right? He's moving a lot.
Yeah. It immediately catapults Plo to top 3 Republic. I mean, he probably was already.
I think we already thought he was, yeah.
Sure. But now he's like, I don't know. For me, like when I build Republic lists now, I think Plo more than I think Obi-Wan, which I think is crazy, right?
It is crazy, yeah.
Obi-Wan is doing really well, but man, I think that makes Plo really good. I mean, if we were to put a tier list right now, I think it just bumps him up to A tier. It's great.
Absolutely. No, he was already such an exciting unit, and now this is a game changer. A nice little, I'm not going to call it a buff for Plo because it was here the whole time, but clarification that his identity is actually usable.
Yes, a buff that already existed, but it has now been brought to the light.
It's absolutely beautiful. So now when Plo does his tactic, if you're doing it right, him and two other units are dashing, and you pair that now with other dashes, it's crazy. And I also think you're already super incentivized to reserve Plo in your Plo list. And I think this is even more the case now, right? Because this could be one of the situations like why people like to reserve Mother Talzin early. If the trigger happens and Talzin gets a dash up the board, that's great, right? Before she goes. So she might as well be in reserve. Plo's no different. If you're attacking his clones that are on the midline scoring a point, well, now you got to be worried about that because Plo's getting an additional dash, right? So absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I'm very happy with that. And I think it is a unexpected delight.
Absolutely. So nice clarification on Plo, Amon. But do you want to run us through this second clarification of the rules that we found out, which is a bit of a game changer on how we approach the game with these timing windows?
Yes. So it is it's a bit of a travesty.
A little bit.
I will get into the specifics. So someone asked, I have a question regarding life drain and coordinated fire. Life drain triggers after a character makes an attack, and coordinated fire triggers when a character makes an attack. However, only one can be used per attack as the triggering event for both is an attack. Is this correct? Ngoldar, this is correct. Both are reactive abilities that trigger off an attack. Then someone else asked, but aren't they two different triggers? Which I would agree, but I'm not a moderator. Coordinated fire triggers at step 3 once an eligible target has been chosen. Life drain triggers at step 10C. The example in the rulebook using Aura Sing's hit and run and double the contract, double the payout are clear since they're both after, which would have been abilities trigger off the same event at 10C. Thoras, another moderator, says, those are different steps in the attack sequence, but not necessarily different events. The same event, depending on which event it is, can trigger at various different timing steps. Coordinated fire also occurs at the start of step 5 rather than step 3. So what this means is that if I'm playing Mother Talzin, I cannot use coordinated fire exposed from my acolyte sisters and then also use life drain, which is a reactive ability, which allows her, if the attack makes damage, to heal.
Hmm.
So it significantly weakens the Dathomirian synergy, first and foremost, because the acolytes always feel like the weak link of that Mother Talzin Savage list.
Right.
But you're like, well, at least they're giving everything coordinated fire expose. Now you have to pick between life drain and coordinated fire expose. Again, a travesty. So I'll explain this again. I don't agree with the ruling, but I'm glad we have clarity. Both abilities trigger off the same event, and that the event itself being an attack. The timing of the event isn't relevant. It's just the event itself, which again is the attack. That is the event that triggers both coordinated fire and life drain. Again, I don't agree with it.
It's tough. This game has a lot of windows, and it is a bummer in the sense of that list, but also just it seems intuitive to be able to use your abilities in this sort of way. So the fact that it's been clarified, I mean, we know it's been clarified now, and I think it puts the question on the Dathomirian player for sure to, do I really want the expose or do I want to get some heals, you know, get a heal off of this window, right? But yeah, I feel very similar, Amon. It is a bit of a bummer in the sense of it doesn't seem as intuitive to me.
Yeah, it doesn't. And that's, I think, my biggest challenge is that everyone who is playing the game was playing the game assuming there were two different triggers. So again, I appreciate the clarification, but I think some sort of change needs to be made to the rulebook to mm-hmm. make that more clear, because I think if it had been clear from the beginning and we weren't already playing it a certain way, then I think we all would have been like, all right, that makes sense. You either coordinate fire or you life drain. Talzin is not the only character that is affected by this change. Mace Windu is also affected. And Jesse, since you're the Republic guy, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolute travesty here for Mace. Probably a much bigger deal for Mace even than Talzin, right? Because the only thing he can spend force on is his rerolls. And the Republic is so active in its playstyle of using coordinated fire. That's one of the biggest strengths of Republic. That now you have a decision to make. Am I triggering a clone coordinated fire? Or am I going to gamble and maybe save my window for Mace's rerolls? The irony of this is I think Dooku gets around all this. Timing of his windows and his is on defense. There's layers to it. And it's probably never exciting to talk about in podcast form. But definitely a slight nerf to Talzin and Mace. I don't know. But I think with Mace, if you've got ARFs with him, you probably just want the ARF coordinated fire, right? Now Mace's rerolls thing is kind of blank on his card in those instances.
It's wild, man. I think we need to get greater clarification on if and then, because I think what the blow ruling also does as well is it just makes it to where you're like, okay, how do we interpret if and then, right? I think that makes it a bit more superfluous. And I think it's important to just get more clarification. Look, at the end of the day, like, just because I like Mother Talzin and they're ruling it a certain way, it's not why I think I am personally disappointed. I think it's just more so it's not intuitive, as Jesse said correctly. And I like when games feel intuitive. So if this is the way that it has always been intended, great. But let's make sure that it's clear.
Well said. Games have these moments, right? And typically things are changed later with the rules and stuff to clean it up. But I don't know. It's one of those things. It is what it is. And we just got to play it as such until a change is made. But that's it for rules, erratas, and updates for right now. Come on.
Yeah. I will say this whole experience started getting me like go down a rabbit hole in the Shadowpoint rules questions forums.
Okay.
And there was just a ton of stuff that popped up, but I thought there was a really interesting question, which it may or may not have been covered. I don't recall if we've talked about it on the show. If a character with a pinned and strained condition were to use a reactive ability that allows them to dash, they would both remove pinned and not dash and take 3 damage for using a reactive ability. Correct. I thought that was really neat that they explained that, because that's always something that I've questioned, but I've never been in a situation where I had to resolve that.
Right. And also, I'm glad you brought up strain. Interesting discussions come up around strain, where strain is triggered and or not triggered, which like is a little unintuitive sometimes for people. So strain is not triggered from a tactic if you had pinned.
Right.
So that, I know some people had been like, oh, my guy's already wounded. Let's use a tactic to get off the pinned and the strained. It's not how it works. Like, let's say like a Dooku tactic or a Plo tactic or whatever, a primary using that. So yeah, there's a lot of little nuances that come up. Shatterpoint is a very complex game.
It is.
It's very easy to learn initially. And Amon and I talk about this a lot. When you get in that, honestly, 10 to 15 game range, I'm talking complete games, little nuances and things start popping up, and also ways that you can swing more points come popping up in your mind as well. And I think the game maybe doesn't get a credit for some of its complexities, but sometimes also the complexities to new players for sure can be a little confusing. And these rules distinctions are one of those cases.
Yeah. Now, I will say that despite the fact that we may have personal feelings on these rulings, I do want to give a big thank you to Atomic Mass Games for answering these questions, providing the forums as a place where we can ask these questions. And I want to give a big shout out to Nagoldar and Thoras for being moderators and for answering these questions and doing the due diligence. And so if you're not happy with these answers, it's not their fault. They're just looking at the rules and then giving us answers based on the rules. You just got to live with it and move on. And that's what we're going to do. And I've already played games with Talzin where I had to choose between Life Drain and Coordinated Fire. And I think it was fine. You know, I'm not mad at it. I just, again, really appreciate the fact that they're providing clarity. And I think we need more clarity. And that needs to start from the rule book. That is all.
Very well said, Mon. Yeah. And good shout out to them, too, because Plo just arrived on his street date. They immediately clarified Plo's identity. What more could you ask for? That's what they've told us is always what they're going to do. When a model's fully out, they will answer and clarify every rules question we have. And it just took Plo being in our hands to get the full clarification of actually how good his identity is.
You're absolutely correct.
One more rules interaction I experienced the other day, Amon, that has nothing to do with errata or clarification, but I thought was interesting because we recently discussed the Luke box in full. And I think Luke's being slept on a little bit. And that's a discussion for another time because some people are claiming he's bad, and I just think that's flat wrong. But also, Luke's ability, you can be either profit by this or be destroyed. It costs one force. It says choose an active objective within two. Each enemy character contesting that objective may dash. Then Luke may dash towards that objective, and Luke may make a five dice attack. Now, what's interesting about this interaction, I think when you read this at first pass, you say, oh, Luke has like a better version of Cad's ability, right? He chooses a point. The enemies have a chance to get away. He can either follow or he can swing into one of them, right? Or they can all stay put and he can just get a free five dice attack. One of the most interesting interactions I've seen of this thus far, and it was in my league game against Godliness, who has been playing Luke flawlessly.
Yeah, Duncan.
So Sabotage Showdown, it's the Donut of Death. Think of Luke was on a right flank with my indoor Leia. My indoor Leia was contesting my bottom part of the donut, max distance up, range two, essentially. And Luke was on the next point up on the midline, and he was max range two down. Okay. He chose his own point as the point. I had no one on there to dash off. He chose to stay put with Luke. You don't have to dash with Luke. And then he made a five dice attack into Leia, who was contesting a different point. That is a cool interaction with Luke with that ability.
That is cool.
At first glance, doesn't seem quite the way you would use it. But that's obviously, I think, its most powerful use, because you can essentially, you could swing on the point that Luke's on with his big attack, and you could choose a point that Luke's close enough to, a second point that Luke's close enough to do another attack. And you could even swap into Ceresi there and shove, say, that Leia off, right, or whatever. Thought that was amazing. And I think it's an interaction that a lot of people haven't quite unlocked. But since Godliness is the highest ranked Luke right now in Longshanks, it makes sense that Godliness has unlocked it. And I wanted to shout out there while we're there, because I think it's a really cool interaction. And once again, I think it furthers the things that we brought up on our episode about Luke, that Luke is going to continue to give and give to the people that put in time with him. And I think he has a really high skill ceiling. And these are some of the interactions, because, you know, the fact that he can double tap and he can dash, and then he can go in certain combinations of it. Very, very interesting. So just want to mention that that's possible.
That's a really neat interaction.
It is. Yeah. And it's very smart on the player who does it, I think, and very impressive. Sure.
Duncan's a great player. I mean, he used to give me a hard time back in the Warhammer Underworlds days when he played. Of course, I still play, but I'm glad that he's in Shatterpoint.
Absolutely. And his Luke went a little dark side and chopped up a lot of Ewoks in our game.
Well, they could have been Ewoks that were following Logray, who joined the dark side. You never know.
That's true. No, I think this was definitely dark side Luke. This was Luke with the Inquisitors and Jango.
Yeah, I will say, shout out to Duncan for consistently sticking to the Grand Inquisitor game plan. I love it.
Keeping that top spot. Good stuff. So that was a fun rules clarification section I'm on. And, you know, some, like, as you said, just knowing this as a community, we continue to rise together. A rising tide lifts all ships. So that's where we're at.
Yes.
We're going to keep you all updated every time we find out a rules interaction that's this massive, like we've done so since the beginning, because we are always learning ourselves. We're always learning. But Aman, we've got a topic today to talk about that you brought up that I thought was really interesting and something that probably is going to be really enlightening for us, especially as North American competitive players.
I agree. And I was particularly excited to see the results from this event. There was an event on January 27th, so, you know, about a month ago, where Australia had its first ever true in-person big Shatterpoint event. It was called CanCon Shatterpoint 2024. And there was 28 players that attended. Some names that you might notice are like Wreath, for example, who's done really well in MCP. I thought Wreath was living in Canada, so I'm not sure if he's back. Wreath, if you're listening, let me know, because last time we played, you were in Canada. Of course, we have Tom Harper, who is the man behind Space Lugs. And so it was really cool to see some people that I knew through the community that I could quote unquote root for, but then also see some interesting lists and strategies and results. So taking a look at the event as a whole, very quickly, I think the tail of the tape, if you will, is very similar to most other events we've seen online or virtual, in that we're starting to see, or rather consistently seeing, the same units at the top in terms of popularity. The most taken primary, according to the lists, which not all of them were done with an SPT code. So we're only looking at SPT codes here, but Maul being the most popular primary, the ARF clone troopers being the most popular supporting units, and Jango Fett being the most popular secondary unit is not a surprise.
Not at all. These are the guys that continue to perform all over the game, can slot them in to pretty much any list you want as well. I think that's been proven time and time again. And yeah, a lot of trends we've been seeing for going on five leagues now, Aman, with us, with our preseason league, and then all the way to Hello There episode 4 of our major leagues.
Absolutely. And even including the general TTS league as well. If you look at the primary unit breakdown outside of the coded list data, 48 games with Lord Maul over the course of the event, 38 games with Darth Vader, Jedi Hunter, 27 games with Mother Talzin, 25 games with Count Dooku. And then we finally get our first true Republic primary with 20 games with Mace Windu, 19 with Obi-Wan, 18 with Lumi, 17 with Asajj, 16 for both Padme and General Grievous, 14 with Ahsoka, 13 with Cad, 4 for Anakin, 3 for the Grand Inquisitor, and 2 for Darth Vader, Emperor's Servant, or Vader 2. The only unused primaries at the time were Luke, all 3 Ewok primaries, including Leia, and Jedi Master Plo Koon. Again, Jesse, very similar data that we're seeing all over the world.
Absolutely. I think the unused models make sense too, because I honestly don't think Australia had these models outside of Luke. So Plo, Leia, and the Ewoks not being represented makes sense. Something I want to point out, Aman, which we've been kind of noticing in certain circles, in fact, our own Hello There League, a favoring of Sabotage Showdown, slightly. Like you said, not all the lists were SBT codes, so unfortunately we can't know exactly everything. But still, even with the subset of data we have of SBT codes, we found out that Sabotage Showdown was played twice as much as Shifting Priorities.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Dark side forces, particularly Separatists like Sabotage Showdown, Mandalorians like Sabotage Showdown, and those are popular.
Mother Talzin loves it. She's got this big range of influence, right, of her identity.
Yeah. Mace Windu likes it.
Mace likes it. I think Republic just, it is bloodier for them, but I think they favor it because I still have the opinion that your clones stay alive a little longer in Sabotage Showdown, as opposed to Shifting Priorities, because of the nature of the shape of the donut, and you can keep the clones on the back line, scoring points and giving coordinated fires up on the midline. So I think Republic likes it too, in the hands of tenured Republic players for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's actually one of the themes of this event, is you're going to see people playing Republic at a very high level. And again, you know, from the beginning of the show, We've had Jesse, who's been really into the Republic side of things. You know, I really like the characters from the Republic, but
yeah,
you know, I love red lightsabers. It's just a thing. And so that's what I gravitated towards. And I think it's really important to talk about people who put in the effort into whatever they play. I mean, yes, some primaries and some units and some combinations are easier to play than others. Some have higher floors, some have higher ceilings. But what a hallmark of Shatterpoint is that you can really win any event with any squad if you put in the reps and you really understand your matchups. And then, of course, get lucky because there are random components that you can't control, right? You can't win any event without getting a little bit lucky, at least. Not to take away from any skill, but it's just a fact of the game. So what I found really interesting is that we actually see quite a bit of General Obi-Wan Kenobi in the top eight. So if we start with top eight and go up to top one, we've got Asajj Dooku Mace Padme, which is cool. So half Separatist, half Republic. Then we have Padme Mace Vader General Obi-Wan. So this guy went full Republic, which I really like.
And that's Oleg. He's one of the highest rated Republics out there.
Yeah, Oleg's good. Then we have Jeff, who is Dooku Maul Vader Lumi. So
kind of a dark side list, yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it was Lumi with Mandos and Maul with Mandos. It was, yeah.
Yes, it was.
Lumi, Rex, Super Mandos, Maul, Obi-2, Clan Kreese. Very interesting. We have Adam with Cad Bane, Dooku, Maul, Talzin, Separatist, Dath, Omerian. Makes sense. We have Tom, the Harp Daddy, Harper, from Space Slugs, who Anakin and Obi-Wan, which he's been pioneering and pushing to great success. And then we also have Grievous and Maul. What I really like about his Grievous and Maul list is that it's full Separatist. It's just Maul is so good, right?
Maul is just so good. Yeah. It gives you full force freedom, essentially, that list.
Then Unlucky Gamer comes in with Asajj, Dooku, Mace, and Obi, Republic, Separatist split. And we have Wreath, who got second with Dooku, Talzin, Vader, Maul, which is one of my favorite combinations.
Scary one.
And then we have Luke Thompson, Talzin, Dooku, Mace, General Obi-Wan. So very interesting groupings of top eight. So Luke was interviewed on Space Slugs podcast, so do check them out.
Yeah, episode 2 of their show, they cover this event in a little bit greater detail.
Absolutely. It's very well done, and you really get Luke's thought process into why he picked the list. And what I really enjoyed is that he mentions Talzin and Dooku is a really great counter to any aggressive lists, which are popular. Vader,
yeah.
Grievous, Maul, Cad, things like that, because you get double what he says revenge triggers, which is very fascinating. And then he played the Mace and General Obi-Wan list primarily because it was painted. And so he knew that he didn't have much time to get other stuff painted. So he committed to Republic because his Republic stuff was painted. And I think he demonstrated some really A-class play with Mace and General Obi-Wan Kenobi, specifically because, you know, I think Republic has been a little maligned. But the fact that he went in with General Obi-Wan Kenobi, Captain Rex, and the Clone Commandos, supported by Windu, Pons, and the ARF Clone Troopers, is super interesting.
Yeah, all good models too, right? And a solid list. And I will say the Mace-Obi-Wan pairing in the hands of a seasoned player is really good against Separatists and really good against Republic mirrors. So it is one of those things you can have in your back pocket to just be super defensive, right, against Separatists, or be super defensive against another Republic list that doesn't have a ton of displacement. And the cool part about Mace and Obi-Wan is Mace with those hunkers and Protection Steadfast and Obi-Wan with the hunkers, it's really hard to displace you from points. So you're really good in those kind of Republic mirrors and stuff. And I think this worked out well.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, Luke played Mace and Obi-Wan twice and Dooku Talzin three times, including the final. So it's a good spread. I mean, in an uneven round event, the fact that you went three with one list and two with the other list means that both lists were played as equally as they could have been. And I really like that. I mean, you can't say that he relied just on one strike team, right? Like, he put in the work with all two. So shout out to Luke. I thought this was just really interesting information. And we've seen a lot of Australians really push for Republic teams. And so we have people like Luke and Tom who've been really pushing that charge. So again, really exciting to see that Oleg as well, right? So shout out to the top eight. Shout out to the Australian community who ran CanCon. I thought that was very fascinating. And I hope that they have more events. And I think we're starting to see finally, Jesse, that despite the fact that there are certain deviations and pocket metas, the overall data tends to be the same. But what I really like about this event in particular is that it shined a light how well you can perform with General Obi-Wan Kenobi if you put in the reps.
Yeah, General Obi-Wan Kenobi is really strong. He continues to be really consistent. But just for the public in general, man, you've just got to put in the reps. And these people certainly have done so. And, you know, cool shout out to Olek as well, who ran All Republic, as you mentioned, the top eight, and bringing Vader 1 and Mace, which means that he had to play the 501st in his list. So I like that as well. Very noble.
Very noble. Yeah. I mean, Vader, Barriss, 501st, obviously the Mace box, Padme box, and then Kenobi Rex clone troopers, 212th. Very interesting.
Yeah, very, very interesting. But this is a fun event to cover him on. And like you said, really strong representation of Vader, Maul, Dooku, and Talzin in the top 16, top 8 in general. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I mean, time will tell, but the dark side is still strong.
Well, both sides of the Force are strong, Jesse.
That's true.
The dark side generally takes an early lead. But if quicker, you put in easier. The hard work, I wouldn't say it's easier.
I'm just quoting Yoda. Quicker and easier.
Yoda didn't know what he was talking about, because he's the one who led the Jedi Order into ruin. Under his guidance and his stagnation and his complacency.
Definitely complacency, yeah.
The Jedi Order fell. And he realized his mistake after all his friends and thousands of clones and droids, if not millions, died. All because he didn't know what he was doing.
It's not all on Yoda, but a lot of it is.
It's not all on Yoda, but I think Yoda made a huge mistake, and then that's why he felt compelled to train Luke and make
right.
good on some of the mistakes he made, make amends, if you will. But again, man, I wouldn't take Yoda's word for a lot of stuff. He's a good trainer. He's a good master, but his theories on the Force, I don't know.
Spoken like Palpatine over here.
Not Palpatine. No, look, if I had to pick between Yoda and Palpatine to be my master, of course I'm picking Yoda. But if I had to pick between Yoda and Mace Windu or Yoda and any other Jedi, I don't think I would pick Yoda, because I think I don't like complacency, and he's a very complacent man.
Mm.
And he lacks judgment.
Mace lacked that too. Yeah. They made some errors, Yoda and Mace together, for sure. Especially regarding Anakin.
But it's Samuel Jackson, bro. It's a pass for a lot, you know?
You gotta remove yourself from the real world here. Yeah. Good stuff. This is a fun event to cover him on, and I look forward to more information from Australia in the future. This was a 28-player event, so pretty big for an in-person event, and some interesting data from this.
Exactly. Speaking of big events, we've got Adepticon coming up in the United States in Schaumburg, Illinois, right outside Chicago. Super excited, because that's going to be a massive event. We had 64 signups. AMG announced that they added more spots to all Shatterpoint events. So we're going to have some pretty big, big events, and I'm really excited to see how the cards fall.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they added more, Mon, because every event was capped. Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. I know I keep going back and forth on every podcast episode, but, and Jesse's rolling his eyes as I say this, but
got my fingers crossed.
I really, really am excited to play Shatterpoint, because I really think I can put a good showing, but it's also the allure of just Michael Jordan three-peat, you know, in Underworlds. I don't know.
Or how about Shatterpoint one-peat, you know, for the first major event in North America.
That'd be cool too.
Yeah, that'd be big. But
that means I have to go through you, and I don't want to do that.
Well, it might have to be done at some point.
If we have in a Hello There final, that would be amazing.
Oh, I don't even
care. I wouldn't care who wins at that point.
I do not care.
I would just be like, hey, do you want to just rock, paper, scissors and go get a drink and celebrate? Because I'd be down, you know?
Yeah, we'd have to play it though, because that professional casual stream, we got to give them a show.
Oh, are they going to stream?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very exciting. Well, this is a fun event to cover, Amon, but we got to move on today to our final discussion this episode. This is a mini discussion we were having off mic, and I was like, we just need to talk about some of this in the episode. And part of it came from this post Wolf World brand for Republic with secondaries and just secondaries in general. We've talked about on the show how important the secondaries are in Shatterpoint. We kind of think they're like really what makes your list go in a lot of ways, or your secondaries, even so much to the detriment of playing a list like Mace Windu with pawns, where you feel like you have dead activations with pawns, and that could either make or break your Mace games, all the way to games where Jango keeps not so fasting and removing activations all the time for some crazy random dice reason, right? That's the spectrum of secondaries. And I thought it'd be a fun discussion just to talk about secondaries in the game right now, and maybe a little bit in the lens of Republic, because Republic did get a new secondary that's very viable. And wherever things looking like it fits at the moment.
I think it's super interesting, because I think initially I was quite dismissive of Wolf and the Wolf Pack. And a couple conversations with some community members made me take a second look. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, I put together a list, Plo Vader, Rex, Arvs, Wolf,
yeah.
Wolf Pack, right? Like it's
yeah,
not a crazy list. you would say that it's the de facto list, I suppose, for both primary characters at this point on the Republic side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, swap out Vader for Anakin in that list as well. It's the same sort of pairings you would probably do.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, Vader gives a little bit more consistency with those free force pushes off Plo's tree, and he's got those recovers to heal that up. So,
yeah,
that's exciting. And then you were talking about the hunker synergies with Obi-Wan. And so I just find Plo to be such a refreshing character. I am very curious, though, on where Wolf pans out in the Republic, because, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking, all right, Rex is the best, right? Rex is the best right. Republic secondary. It is what it is. He goes where you're probably going to play the primary the most. Following that, it's a toss-up between Ahsoka and Wolf. And so you're thinking,
yeah, man. Some people would say Sabe, too. Some people
would, yeah. Yeah, I would not be one of those people. Unless Same. You're taking Handmaidens.
Of course, that's all another ballgame then.
Yeah, and I think Handmaidens are a really good supporting unit. And before the Wolf Pack, I would say that they were probably the best.
Yeah.
After the ARFs.
8 stamina.
That's really what it is. They're very mobile too.
Yep.
But the Wolf Pack, having the ability without Vader's identity to have 2 8 dice attacks is very fascinating. With Vader's identity, if you want to take 2 damage on one of them, you know, you could maybe have an 8 attack and 11 dice attack. That's a lot of dice to throw at something. And they've got some shoves in their tree. And the reason we're talking about the Wolf Pack while we discuss Commander Wolf is because they are what's making me want to include Wolf more in lists.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, I just don't play as much Republic as you do. But from a theoretical perspective, I like Wolf. But he does have a reliance on having clone trooper synergy.
Yes.
And I think time will tell over time. And I think this is going to be the long-term decision, but maybe not the short-term one you're hoping for, is if the clones and the Wolf Pack continue to be weaker or not perform up to expectations, then you just go with Padawan Ahsoka.
Instead of Wolf.
Yes.
I agree, because she's just so mobile and getting ahead of yourself snips is such a powerful ability. I am intrigued, and as we talked in our episode, about Wolf's viability with his Wolf Pack innate ability, basically having his clone troopers and himself not crits not being turned off. So my thoughts immediately go to the Wolf Pack with all their shoves and the 212th with their shoves and high damage and best crits in Republic in the game at the moment from expertise in that regard. So I don't know. I think he's great. Absolutely. I think it is a flavor for Republic players out there. And I think this discussion gets way more interesting when you talk about the Premier format. Because now we're talking about having another viable secondary in Republic when maybe not necessarily all of them were super viable or had to be put in niche spots. And I think Wolf is a little bit of a Rex where you can almost blindly throw him into a list and it's probably really solid because he's a consistent piece that shoves models or does a lot of damage. He gives your models climb, which is super cool because we talked about in the episode, that's just 2 dashes at the end of the day if you really want it. He might not be the super solo that Rex is, but he's right behind Rex. And that's really good for Republic because our options have been limited for some time.
Yeah, I agree. I also think Wolf Pack is kind of slept on a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so for those who are not familiar, when Wolf is not wounded, whenever a clone trooper makes an attack that's within 5 of another allied clone trooper unit, your clone trooper's attacks, the crits can't be modified. So if you're attacking like someone like Dooku, who has an amazing defensive expertise, which turns a lot of crits to fails, can't do that anymore. And I think that kind of pressure adds up a little bit and can really help you get through some of those more defensible units.
It's certainly making clones just better, right? Just more consistent on their trees. Then you have these clones that have more crits maybe. Like I said, the 212th or even the clone commandos. If you really want to get down their tree now, maybe it's just easier with Wolf in your list. We've got to test more. We've got to see what he can do. But I think he's pretty amazing. And I think he's the best clone sculpt thus far in the game.
Oh, that is without a doubt.
Not even close.
The ARFs look cool.
Honestly, the Wolf Pack and 212 look cool because they got the long DC rifles yeah. and they're crouched and they're taking the sniper shots.
I just like when clones have like droid rubble around them, like they're really mean in business. Cause
absolutely.
It really shows that they're putting in that work.
Yeah, so the ARFs having the B1s. It's pretty amazing.
Like if I ever get my hands on a second set of the core set, or if someone's like getting rid of their B1s, I'm going to use those bodies as pieces of rubble on the clone bases, because those clones deserve some respect, man.
I absolutely adored that the Handmaidens had some B1 rubble on their bases.
Yes.
It was very thematic of like the battle in Naboo and taking back the city. So yeah, Wolf being on this dwarf spider droid wreckage, and then he's doing that side lunge jump and double shooting. I mean, he's going full Neo in the Matrix.
Full here. Commando, bro.
Yeah. It's so
even though
good.
He's not Commando.
Even though he's not Commando, it is so, so good. So, I mean, if anything, we got him on the table with that. But continuing the discussion of secondaries going, Amon, I kind of started the segment talking about how we've got more options as secondaries, and they really are the blood of Shatterpoint. You've been turning a corner on Savage.
I have been, but, you know, well, I'll say this. When you play Premiere, you have to make absolutely. Concessions.
Absolutely. Right?
I know that some people don't like Premiere. But Premiere seems like the game was balanced around the Premiere format. A lot of the excess is not possible in the Premiere format, or you have to make huge sacrifices to be able to go to those perhaps standard games, showdown games. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Savage is interesting because I can't put Django in every list, right? I can't put OB2 in every list.
It's the fairest format, in my opinion. It's the most competitive format, in my opinion, too, because the players are making decisions turn zero and they're presumably outplaying their opponent by not having a list of just all good stuff every time.
Yeah.
You've got to play all those lists by tournament end.
Well, I think that was another thing, was that I was playing a lot of Vader Maul, and okay, I just realized that I was advantaged into most games. And while you do lose some, I wasn't thinking like, oh, you know, it's not because Vader and Maul aren't good. It was because either my opponent made plays or I failed to make plays or recognize plays and so on and so forth. You know, and sometimes dice are a factor, but I generally try to avoid any sort of implications on dice. So I think going back to Savage, I put him in Mother Talzin. There was a game where I played against one of my patrons, Stephen Porter, where Savage just like killed three of my units. And I was like, all right, respect. And he made this comment like, but you guys put him in C tier, Amon. Why, you know, you put him in C tier. So I deserved that a little bit because I did.
I think he stayed in B though. Kevin and I held him in B.
That's fair. Yeah.
But you were giving a good case why he could be C for sure.
Yeah. And I think that was just an example of like when Savage spikes, he can really take people out.
Absolutely.
And he had, and he did consistently. But I think following that, it was more of a, is Savage able to support the list, especially Talls, in a way in which I think allows me to not worry about playing him. And the conclusions I came to were Savage will still go down if people want him to go down. I think every game I played with him so far, he has been wounded at least once, if not both times. He does a lot of damage, for sure. But I think his biggest strength is that expertise, because you just jump back if you get knocked off a point defensively. And I think people are scared of him, which you can use that as a almost not as like a zoning technique as well. So I have changed my tune on Savage.
Well, and the fact that he can move so many times without even his turn.
Yeah.
Right? And he's got protection steadfast. He doesn't need to roll dice necessarily, right? If he's scaring people and he's winning a point by himself, he's earning his value because he's helping you win the game.
Yeah, well, the way I roll dice, I never really roll well defensively, so my boy needs the steadfast and protection otherwise.
He gets to that point usually without even going because of Unwinning Brute, because of Mother's Dash, because of various other elements, because of Dooku triggers. Dooku can move him as well. It's insane.
That's correct. I suppose in the last two games, I've just been unfortunate in my draw order as well, where I like start the game, draw Magna Guards, reserve, go into Savage, and you're like, well, that's unfortunate, right? Yeah, I mean, he's just super mobile, and like Furious Rush is neat, and then when he's wounded, obviously he can advance as well, cost two fours, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
So I like Savage. I certainly, outside of Premiere, he wouldn't be the first or the second secondary I pick up, especially if I'm playing Separatists or some sort of dark side adjacent list.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the Premiere format, when you have to make hard choices, it's very easy to keep him with Talzin and be able to perform.
Okay. Well said. Yeah. No, I think he's an all-star in the Premiere format if you have an all dark side list, because he just fits a spot with a guy who stays on a point and scores, right? And like you said, sometimes can spike and all of a sudden he's a primary with the spikes, you know, which is absolutely crazy. But keeping that secondary theme going, I feel like other secondaries are getting left behind a bit in some ways because it's getting so wide. I'm not saying like left behind because of power level or anything like that. I just think because people are trying certain things, and also maybe they don't have room in their list, especially when they're not playing Premier. So, I mean, top of mind models like that, Aura, Barriss, of course, Cody, poor Cody. Even now 3PO and R2, though you did mention, I think they probably have a lot of viability in the Ewok list, but it's just hard to have a full support unit. And even all the way to Sabe outside of this Handmaiden list. And Reva, like there's models that we're not seeing as much, and we'll probably continue to see less because we're getting more and more secondaries every so often.
Well, I think how you said it yourself at the beginning, like secondaries are like the lifeblood of your list. You need them to perform at a level in which maybe your primary can't, because a lot of the value the primary brings is their identity.
Yes.
And that's a tax in terms of their ability suite, where secondaries have no such tax. So they can be very potent characters on the battlefield. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think, when I think about secondaries that unfortunately are maligned or less popular for whatever reason, the first one that I think of is Third Sister. I mean,
yeah,
I was reading actually a thread in our Hello There Discord where someone said, hey, I'm newer, I want to make Inquisitors work. And then you had like tagged a couple people to give their input. And someone said, first off, remove Reva. If you want to make Inquisitors work, remove Reva. And I thought that was so telling because Reva is a Inquisitor secondary, a secondary that's designed to work with that package. And she is a liability in that list. I think Sabe is an interesting mention. I think she's one of those secondaries that works really well in the Amidala list. But outside of the fact that she's so heavily designed around working with fellow handmaidens, it's just a limitation. But I don't know if she's left behind per se. But yes, Cody for sure is an unfortunate.
Cody's a whole nother class of left behind. No, and I think Sabe is great. I think her tree is great. Obviously, giving cover with her bodyguard is great. I just think quite frequently, especially in a non-premier format, people are like, oh, I'm playing Republic. Oh, I want like Rex and Padawan Ahsoka. Or I want Rex and Wolf now or something, right? And Sabe kind of gets left behind in that way. And part of it, I think, is on us. I think we all think of her as this amazing piece with handmaidens, which she absolutely is. But one of the first Sabe conversations we had on the show was maybe we should think outside of the box and try her in other places without handmaidens and see how viable that is. And I still think that is viable. It's just maybe not as plug and play and requires a little bit of practice.
Yeah. But also when you think about those lists where you could try her, right? And even with practice, with the introduction of Wolf and officially Padawan Ahsoka to a majority of the player base now,
yep,
she becomes more niche.
No, I agree. So those come to mind. Poor Reva, poor Cody, absolutely. But even like Bao Shleya, I don't think we're seeing a ton of her right now. And part of it's because of the point cost. Part of it's because OB2 exists.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is a lot of Luke lists are just taking OB2.
Yeah.
Because it just, Luke doesn't require any specific synergy. And so, again, we get in this weird conundrum in non-premier events where it's like shove in all the good stuff, which is why I think we need to just play more premier as a community and moving forward and online and leagues and stuff. And you know, obviously playing online with those leagues, it's fun because you can just try new stuff, but you can always create windows where it's like you can change your lists every 3 weeks, you know, halfway through the Swiss, and then you can change it in the top 16, then you can change, you know, whatever. Like there's some ways that you can change the lists for sure to allow for more flexibility. But I think premier format is the best way to play the game because a lot of the forethought that you have to make and those turn zero decisions is baked into this game's balance.
I agree. One, it's not exciting either to have models like Sideline that are good models that just get slightly outclassed. I mean, case in point, Gar versus Jango. You just see more Gar in the premier format. You just see more Gar because he's a great model. He just gets edged out by someone like Jango. And so in the regular format, somebody very competitive just takes Jango instead. Gar gets sidelined, and Gar's an amazing piece.
Yeah, I mean, I love Gar. I've been a big fan of him since the rip, but unfortunately, yeah, Jango and OB2 are just like the clear-cut choices. And then also there's good conversation to be had around Bo and Gar as well. So
of course.
It's a very nuanced conversation, and I probably think we could dedicate a whole episode to it or a series of episodes with list building in particular.
I agree.
But yeah, it's something to think about, and I think Wolf really prompted that thought process from the both of us, specifically on the Republic side, because, you know, as we get into more Empire and Rebel releases, I wonder if the flow of Separatist and Republic characters will continue, right? So at what point do we just say, like, and you know, look at MCP, right? Same company. They like put a bunch of stuff out for a particular affiliation and then they'll revisit it, right? But they put the core out there first. And so I just wonder, like, when will we get to that point where it's like, all right, this is the Republic unit pool that you have, and then maybe once a year you'll get an update.
Yeah. And that happening, it adds a lot of viability to putting in work now on models like Sabe and stuff, right? And using them. Because there might be an opening in the future where they really, really shine, even though I think they shine right now. But you're right. This could be the pieces we have for Republic and Separatists for a while. And I think that puts even more onus on playing Premier. It just does.
Agreed.
You can't just like build the best thing every time. And I mean, yeah, it's not the fairest way to do the game either, in my opinion. And even underused models like Riva and Cody, they have much more of a place in Premier. That's the type of thing where maybe sometime out from now, you can have a full Galactic Empire list, surely, of four Galactic Empire primaries. And Riva does fit in that list because per the Premier rules and spreading of models around and things like that, she has a place on that Inquisitorious side or something. So I think this is just a big ringing endorsement for Premier and us saying since the beginning that it is, we think, the most competitive and most balanced and fun version of the game too.
Yeah.
It might seem daunting at first though to some people.
It is. And I get that, like, you know, from a competitive standpoint, people don't like to not be able to plan into what they think they're going to see.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the game, right? Like, that's why you got to make your list balance. You can't really over rely on a particular couple of units or a particular strategy. Like, you really just got to be the best player that you can in the situation you're in, which I really appreciate. Now, speaking of future releases, we're getting Bad Batch, I think, in May.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So we still got some more Republic down the pipe, which is exciting.
Right. And what they could do for Republic going forward would be really interesting to see. Are they a self-contained unit or can they be splash places as well, right? So there's options on the table, but I even see stuff like Bausch Leia and I'm like, will she have synergy with Hondo or Cad Bane? She does have synergy with Cad Bane right now.
Yeah, she's a bounty hunter.
Right. But I say this because AMG's been hinting at this for a while. They've been hinting at Hondo and Cad Bane being one of their favorite pairings. And I'm like, does Bausch Leia sneak in that list somewhere, right?
Dude,
like
that. I mean, I could definitely see Cad Bane, Hondo, Bausch, Django, bounty hunters, and then Hondo's supporting unit and just going to town.
The tough part is, can Bausch Leia fit there because of her era? We'll see where Hondo ends up. But Hondo, he's been around Clone Wars all the way to the sequel trilogy. So they could put him in whatever era they want.
But there's two distinct versions of Hondo. Like, you see a shift, right? Like, you see, I guess, how AMG has labeled him, the honest businessman he is in the Clone Wars.
Very honest.
To the, and I don't want to spoil anything, so to the individual he becomes, if you haven't seen Rebels yet, in the Rebel show.
Right, and then to follow Rebels in the original trilogy and eventually a sequel trilogy timeline, because he is fully canon and at Galaxy's Edge and all that, which is fully a sequel trilogy timeline, and he's actually a major character at that part. You're flying the Falcon with him and Chewie, so that's a whole thing as well. So he's been around a long time. Amon is what I'm saying. Similar to Cad. Yes. Does Bausch Leia fit there? Right. Does Cody have a place with the Bad Batch? Right. There's layers and layers to it. So get your reps now is what I always say. Try stuff now. Push yourself as a player. Become a more well-rounded player by playing more things. Because not only do you learn how to play these things, but you learn how to play against them. And you just have more fun, you know, trying new things out.
True.
Well, Amon, I agree with you. I think we're going to have to return to this topic in the near future. And list building regards and just the secondary discussion and just keep it going. This was a fun first part of the secondary discussion.
I think so. Yeah, it's definitely just a thought provoker for the listener out there and for us especially as well, because, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Like, how do you feel secondaries operate in Shatterpoint? Do you feel like they're the lifeblood as we do? Do you think that they're a bit more plug and play, or do you think that you can really rely on maybe some of your favorites to see you through the day in any situation, right? Like, and I think that's what's interesting. And obviously we've seen, I think, the strongest difference in terms of the tops of where really good secondaries can go and how poor secondaries, and I use that word lightly, languish at the bottom, right? So
yeah.
I think that's the starkest difference we've seen across all three unit types.
Absolutely. And yeah, the top and bottom in Shatterpoint is so nuanced and so minimal compared to other game systems. I still feel very privileged that we have the game that we do, Amon, where it's, you know, maybe a lower win rate primary like an Anakin or a Grand Inquisitor, is really not that far off from the primaries at the very top, as opposed to other game systems where the canon is very vast and very wide, right? So I'm very proud to call this our game, and that AMG, I think, has done a really good job balancing this game. I think the secondaries are very similar. I mean, yeah, there's a couple that need a little bit of love, but what's crazy is when they get that love, they slot right in their spots, right? So praise to AMG on that and making a balanced game system.
For sure.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We hope you guys enjoyed this discussion, discussing these rules erratas, the CanCon results, and discussions coming around that. And then, of course, our mini discussion on secondaries, which there'll be more to come on that in the near future. But we got to tell you guys all the places you can find us online and where you can support us if you'd like to do so. Hello There is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Hello There patron by going to patreon.com/HelloThereCast. Of course, quick refresher, if you pledge on the Patreon, you get immediate access to our private Discord, our private leagues, behind the scenes gatherings. You also get the first look at upcoming projects and things behind the scenes. You're the first people to get that before the rest of listeners do. And yeah, you guys make the show happen, so we really appreciate it. If you want to follow us online, check us out on X, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch, all at the same place, at HelloThereCast. Email us at HelloThereCast@gmail.com and leave us reviews on your podcast platform of choice. It really means a lot. Thumb over and give us 5 stars. If you're listening right now, just thumb over, give us 5 stars. If you want to write something, we read all of your reviews. That means a lot, but you don't have to. Just give us 5 stars and helps continue to grow this Shatterpoint community with more visibility out there.
Absolutely. We'd like to give a big shout out to Lowfeel as well for the show's music. And yeah, come hang out. Leave us some 5-star reviews. And we really appreciate your listening and your continued support, which I guess we're coming up our 1 year. So that'll be, I think, after Adepticon.
It's exciting. Yeah. After Adepticon, we'll hit our 1 year. And those of you guys that have been with us the whole way, means a lot. You guys keep us going every week, right? So, and we hope we bring some enjoyment to your week every week when we release a new episode. Of course, we got to tell you the place you can find me and Amon online. You can find me, Jesse, all at the same place, at Jesse Aiken, JESSEEAKIN. That's X, Instagram, Longshanks, Discord. And check out my show about Marvel Crisis Protocol, Fury's Finest, and everything Marvel Universe, everywhere podcasts can be found. Amon, where can everyone find you?
You can find me at most places at Amon, and you can check me out on Path to Glory, the Warhammer Underworlds podcast that focuses on competitive gaming, player development, and community growth. Check it out.
Absolutely do that. Well, we're very excited for the weeks to come leading up to Adepticon, but until next time, may the Force be with you.
Civilized.